Okay, so a thought on the Parsha and until today, a thought on July 4th as well. So we have the longest Torah reading of the year, the only competitor being Vayakol Pekudei when it's also Chodesh. In the beginning of the second of our Parsha, Masseh lists all the journeys, all the stops on the journey, more precisely. Of the Jews in the desert, in the Midbar. And they're all in Mefarshim, try to figure out why we bother listing all of these. So Rashi already quotes two different positions, one from Rav Moshe HaDarshan, who argues that the purpose of this list is to illustrate God's kindness. How is that so? Because you have 42 different places listed. And if you trace it, you'll discover that 22 of those places the Jews camped in either during the first or the last year of the time of the Midbar, which means that over the remainder 38 years, they were only in 20 different places, which means that God, despite the fact that their wandering in the desert was a punishment, didn't make them move constantly, but rather gave them a little bit of respite. And therefore, some of these places they really stayed on for years and could establish themselves. That's the position of Moshe Darshan. The second position, which Rashi cites from the Tanchuma, he explains by Derech Mashal, though I don't think Rashi's Mashal is actually identical to the way it appears, or the usage of the Mashal is identical to the way it's in Tanchuma. But the way Rashi presents it is there's a Mashal of a king whose son took ill, and therefore he took him on a journey to find medical treatment for him. And on the return trip, at each stage, he tells the son what happened. Now, from Rashi, I think the purpose of this is to illustrate, just like the position of Moshe Darshan, the love that God has for the Jewish people. However, in the Tanchuma, which Rashi is actually based on, it seems to be a bit more of a negative, a cynical approach, which is that God details each place in which the Jews angered him. Now, this could be that it's still showing God's mercy, meaning despite the fact that God's had reason to be angry multiple times over, he still led them through the desert with miracles and the like. Alternatively, it's meant as mussar, to rebuke the Jews for everything that they've done and make sure they remind it, that they're reminded of it. The Sforno offers a different interpretation. The Sforno notes that in Yirmiyahu, God praises the Jews for having been willing to go into the desert. I've remembered the kindness of your youth. It's the mashal there is ahavat klulotayach, the love of when we were when you were a bride, when we were just married, that you took that leap of faith and you followed me into the desert. So according to the Sforno, based on this, he argues that the reason that you list all these is to tell you that it wasn't just a single act. But the Jews constantly were traveling. Sometimes they were there for a day. Sometimes they were for years. Sometimes they were in a nice place and was comfortable, and God made them move to a less comfortable place. And nevertheless, they did it. And therefore, the point of going through all these travels is to say that that love that the Jews expressed, that commitment, that leap of faith, was expressed throughout the journey. Nechama Leibovich points out that this offers a fascinating perspective. And she writes, Torah shows us both sides of the coin. We've been shown in Israel composed of rebels and grumblers, having degenerated from the lofty spiritual plane of their religious experience at Mount Sinai, having become slaves to their selfish passions, ungrateful and quarrelsome. Now the Torah changes its note and shows us the other side of the picture. Israel loyal to their trust. They follow him in spite of all the odds. And I think that's a very nice idea, that what the Sforno is trying to do is balance it, right? That Sefer Bamidbar is essentially a story of the Jews' sins and mistakes and rebellions. And then here, the Torah corrects that, or balances it, and shows that no, but they still had that faith, and they followed God 42 different times throughout the desert. But what the Sforno doesn't explain, and Nachum Halevi doesn't explain, which is striking to me, is that if this is true, You have to ask, why is this only provided at the end of the 40 years? Meaning, if you really want to have a counterpoint, so you want to balance the picture, do it while the Jews who sinned and were killed for their sins are alive. And yet, if you look at the end of Parshat Korach, after the rebellion at Korach and the subsequent post-rebellion and complaining, we hear nothing of the Jews, right? The last words we hear from them are, Kulanu gafanu, we all die, we've all expired, we've all left the world. And then, in fact, that's what happens. We never hear from them again. You have the Parsha of, you have Parshat Chukat with Parah Adumah, which talks about the Tahara process from death, and it seems to be sort of a nod to the fact that the Jews died, and then you emerge, and you're in year 40. So we never hear about them. So why is it that if you're going to balance the view, you only do it as a retrospective? And here I think you could offer several possibilities. One is perhaps that maybe Nechama Leibovich's point is not correct, meaning maybe the second generation is righteous and the first generation is not. So it's not a balance. The first generation was bad, and that's why the last thing we hear is that they're dying because of their sins. And the second generation, who are going into Eretz Israel, they're good, and therefore we hear that they traveled and followed God throughout the desert. Now, this, I'll admit, is very difficult, because Lechtecha Acharei Bamidbar sounds like the first generation also had that leap of faith. So to say that this praise is only for the second generation, I find to be odd. More likely, I would say, is that maybe there's a reason to only mention this in a retrospective. Now, why? So again, here I think you could go in different directions. Maybe you would say that the sinners died for their sins, and therefore during their lifetime, it's not worth mentioning. They were good. It's you almost want to hide it to show that they were Rishayim. And later on, they're dead. So then you can come back and you can balance the picture, which, I mean, is a bit unfair, but maybe that's what it is. But I would suggest one other possibility, and that's the following. Maybe, it's specifically the second generation who need to hear the balanced picture about their parents. Why? Because on the one hand, the first generation, they really did sin, and they were the reason that they were in the desert for 40 years, and that's why the second generation goes into Israel and the first generation does not. And therefore, the second generation, when they turn, to the better, turn towards Eretz Israel, they very easily could have fallen into the trap of saying the first generation was terrible, and therefore everything is us. There was nothing redeemable to the first generation. It's all us. And that's a problem because the first generation was imperfect, but it wasn't only terrible. Meaning they did Lechtecha Acharei Bamidbar. They did go into the desert. They were the ones who accepted the Torah. And even if they sinned and therefore they were unable to go into Eretz Yisrael, that doesn't mean that there weren't qualities that they had that were good. And more than that, that the fact that the Jews get to go into Eretz Yisrael in the end of the day is building on the good that existed in the first generation. And therefore, it's the second generation specifically who needs to hear that balanced picture so that they don't forget the fact that they may be better than their parents, maybe, but they're still building on what the good qualities of their parents had. And my brief thought for July 4th is that, there's a movement, and I hope I'm not being too political here, but there are people who point to the fact that that definitely the founding of the United States was imperfect. That's for sure. Slavery existed for a long time after the country was founded, despite all the claims to freedom and freedom of man, the Declaration of Independence. That's definitely true, but there's two ways of looking at that. One is to say they were flawed, and therefore everything they did was terrible, and we need to tear it down to the ground and start again, and don't acknowledge any of the good in these people who were flawed, admittedly. The alternative approach is to say, look, in the end of the day, you're right. The Declaration of Independence has these values of freedom and equality, built into it, and that's built into the Constitution, and it was manifest imperfectly. But later on, when people would fight to end slavery, and then to the civil rights movement, and to try to get us closer to a just society, in the end of the day, it was building on the values that the founders of America actually had. And I know it's sometimes it's people want to be simplistic, so they say, well, were they good? Were they bad? Did they believe in freedom? Did they not? And the answer might be, look, it's true they believed in it imperfectly, but the fact that they articulated those values and tried to build a society along those values means that even if we're correcting their mistakes, we're not starting from nothing. We're channeling the values that they believed in, and maybe believed in imperfectly and manifested imperfectly, but we're not starting from nothing. We don't have to pretend. And I think in general, it's healthier to believe that just because people definitely have flaws, just like the first generation desert had flaws, that doesn't mean that the successes that we have aren't perfecting the qualities that they had, even if they themselves manifested it not perfectly. We're trying to manifest it more perfectly. In that sense, we can both acknowledge their failings and the room that there is to grow, while at the same time not seeing a complete discontinuity with the past and not recognizing that goodness develops as a process. So those are my thoughts on July 4th as it emerges from the Parsha. And I'm sorry that at that moment Ezra walked in, if that made it unclear.